Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte to over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information online at usairways.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Lawmakers are looking into a plan to reduce Florida's risk when it comes to insurance and hurricanes, but the talk's not everyone's cup of tea.
Frankly, I find nothing more boring than insurance. Sorry, entire audience.
We'll get the latest on the Florida legislature's present approach to health care expansion.
I think the Florida House is pretty much letting the Senate take the lead on this. We've heard talks of they may be introducing something, but nothing has been introduced just yet.
And some Florida lawmakers are insisting the state do something to tighten its gun laws.
In a meeting with those folks prior to session, really where the passion comes from is that these individuals say that they feel like they're living in Beirut, that they have to lock their doors by 6:30 p.m. every night, have to lay on the floors, have to avoid sitting by windows.
I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. When it comes to insurance, Florida has had more than its share of trouble. Some insurance programs are struggling with fraud. Others are facing difficulty staying afloat in a hurricane-prone zone. Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers looked into those issues during a Senate committee meeting today.
Unless you're a professional, insurance, including insurance legislation, can be confusing. And let's be honest, sometimes the proposed policies even get to be a little too much for the lawmakers. Senator Nancy Dietert, a Republican from Venice, says that could be the case with a measure proposed by Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican from St. Petersburg.
You just have so much in this bill, almost probably too much.
Brandis's bill would make a variety of insurance-related changes in a number of different areas. For example, it would give people the option of using an electronic proof of insurance. And while Brandis did his best to explain exactly what his bill would do, some questions got a little tough even for him. And that's when lawmakers call in the expert.
He specifically answered that question because I know you're going to get in the weeds pretty quickly.
I've got my weed whacker and my Roundup out here.
The panel of lawmakers also considered some heavier issues, like a piece of legislation involving the state's Hurricane Catastrophe Fund, or CAT Fund, which Senator Jeremy Ring, a Democrat from Margate, says is kind of a big deal.
This is a major issue for the state. We're not debating what we oftentimes debate here. This is an issue which ultimately affects every policyholder in the state of Florida.
The Hurricane Catastrophe Fund was created in the early 90s after Hurricane Andrew to make sure insurance companies are willing to work in a state like Florida that has a lot of risk. Now it's a pot of money that's used to help insurance companies pay claims that are filed after a catastrophic event, like a major hurricane. A measure proposed by Senator Ellen Hayes, a Republican from Umatilla, would decrease the amount of money the state would be on the hook to pay, from the current $17 billion to $16 billion. And it would also change the fund's name in order to make things easier when it comes to bonding, which Hayes says in the event of a major storm, the state would have to do.
When we have a $17 billion maximum coverage, we're effectively telling the insurance companies that we will reinsure their risk up to that amount. And we have only about $8.6 billion in CAT fund reserves. And so the difference between that $17 billion and that $8.6 is what we're going to have to borrow.
Florida insurance consumer advocate Robin Westcott says she likes Hayes' plan. Her staff estimates the change would lead to only about a 1% increase in market rates. But Senator Jeremy Ring has a different plan. He's proposing an amendment to take things in a different direction.
This amendment would take down the level of retention fund from $7.5 billion to $5 billion. And the second thing, essentially, it'll do is it'll allow the bonding to go out 3 years from 1 year.
Ring says his plan helps to better align risk and rates. He says it lets the state sell more reinsurance at a lower rate. Reinsurance is insurance that's purchased by another insurance company to help manage risk. Ring says he hopes that would lead to a reduction in policy rates. And he says bonding out further could help take care of an increased risk that would go along with the lower retention rates he's proposing. But some opponents say Ring's plan could backfire. Meanwhile, Senator Tom Lee, a Republican from Brandon, says he's not sure lawmakers should be doing much of anything this year.
I think that what we've already done in Citizens that's going to increase insurance rates is enough for this session.
Ring's amendment passed, essentially changing the direction of the measure, and Senator Hayes asked to temporarily postpone the bill. Meanwhile, a bill in the House that's similar to Hayes' proposal is moving forward. Now, if after all of that, you're still having trouble getting yourself pumped about insurance, well, you're not the only one. You've got Senator Dietert for company.
Frankly, I find nothing more boring than insurance. Sorry, entire audience.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Continuing the healthcare reform discussion here on Florida Public Radio's Capitol Report, joined once again by Lynn Hatter, who's been following the situation. We had Medicaid expansion in the very beginning, back during Governor Rick Scott's State of the State address, which he advocated expanding federal Medicaid. We get into the legislative process, Lynn, and it seems to be a wholesale rejection of that concept. Suddenly there is a plan B, and now there's a plan C. Give us the background on how we got from there to here.
Basically, under the Federal Affordable Care Act, people know it sometimes as Obamacare, it was up to states if they wanted to add more people into their Medicaid rolls. Florida rejected that. Florida said they're not going to do it. So you still have to deal with a large population of people who don't have insurance. Senator Negron had a plan that would cover 1.2 million Floridians who would have otherwise gained Medicaid insurance under the law, and his plan relied on expanding Florida's Kid Care program. All of those people would go into Kid Care. They would be eligible for kind of subsidized health plans, and under Negron's proposal, the state may also be able to pull down the federal Medicaid money it otherwise would have gotten had it done the expansion. That's Negron's plan. Now here we are in the fifth week of session, and Senator Aaron Bean, a Jacksonville Republican, has come out with a sort of plan C, and his proposal does not rely on any federal money, and it would only cover about 600,000 people.
Now, that is all going on in the Senate. We have both the Negron Plan B, and now we have the Bean Plan C. That begs the question, what is going on in the Florida House of Representatives about Medicaid expansion or health care reform?
I think the Florida House is pretty much letting the Senate take the lead on this. We've heard talks of they may be introducing something, but nothing has been introduced just yet. House Speaker Will Weatherford spoke to the Black Caucus last night and talked about a proposal could be forthcoming. But right now we have Negron's plan and we have Senator Bean's plan. And Senator Bean's plan was actually released today. In fact, it just got voted out of committee on a party line vote.
All right. So this also means then that we have another moving part in this whole equation, which is, as far as the federal government is concerned, which would have to ostensibly fund at least a portion of whatever expansion of health care we have in Florida for lower income people, be it through the Florida Kid Care program or what the Bean plan is talking about.
The federal government, in fact, under Bean's plan, and we should just explain a little bit about it, it only addresses people who are 100% or below of the federal poverty level. That is for a person who makes under $11,500 a year. And Bean's plan does not rely on any federal funding. So it doesn't even address the expansion population, only those who are basically, if you make too much money for Medicaid, but you also make too few dollars to purchase regular assistance, you would probably fall under Bean's plan. The person would pay about $20 a month. The state could kick in an additional $10. With that money, they would establish a health savings account. They could go on our state-based program called Florida Health Choices. It's not yet operational, but Florida Health Choices, which is for small businesses, would be expanded to include these individuals, and they would get kind of what are wraparound service plans. So if you need a pharmacy benefit plan, or if you have medical conditions where you need to see you know, a certain kind of doctor. It would kind of fill in that gap. And they would be able to pay for those kind of plans. So it's very, very limited. And actually, it doesn't even fall under the Federal Affordable Care Act. So the state would not need any kind of federal approval to launch a Senator Bean's plan.
So now with two plans operational in the Senate, where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? Well, both of these are going to be moving at the same time. Some people are suggesting that they could somehow be merged. It's a little bit gray right now. You've got a lot of consumer advocates who say they do not want Senator Bean's plan. They would rather have Negron's plan because it covers more people. And again, it taps into federal money. Both of these proposals will now start moving. And what happens now and the end of the session is pretty much up in the air.
And we'll be keeping an eye on it throughout the session here on Capitol Report. Thank you for the latest update, Lynn Hatter.
You're welcome.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, when is a cafe an arcade and when is gambling just legal entertainment?
There has only been vehement opposition and never any proactive response to try to work together to create the proper regulations.
Discussion over changing the Florida Senate's election reform bills grow tense today between both political parties.
This is just part of a continuing political effort to try to keep this issue in the news, no matter how we move towards a much better product. We'll just ride this horse until it dies.
And Governor Rick Scott signs his first bill from the 2013 lawmaking session.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment, on the web at abletrust.org.
There are many bills in Florida this legislative session that deal with gun laws. Some measures call for stronger restrictions on the use or sale of firearms. Others focus on deregulation and fewer gun constraints. Stephen Rodriguez reports some lawmakers say they want more attention on the gun issue to make changes happen.
It's been nearly 4 months since the Newtown, Connecticut shooting that claimed the lives of 20 children and 7 faculty members. At the onset of the tragedy, almost 60% of America was in favor of more stringent gun laws. Less than 1 in every 10 wanted the laws to be relaxed in any way. But a recent CBS News poll suggests that in the 4 months since the massacre, the number of Americans wanting stricter gun laws has gone down by 10%, while the number of people wanting less regulation has gone up. And in a southern state like Florida, it's a statistical dead heat. Half want more regulation and half want to keep it the same. This has created tension in the legislature. Some lawmakers, like Senator Dwight Bullard, a Democrat from Miami, say gun laws aren't moving through committees.
What we're at is at the midway point of session and looking at the reality that very few gun control-related bills have moved or begun to move in this process.
Bullard cites several bills, all filed by Democrats and all but one filed over a month ago, that have still to even go before their first committee. Some of the bills include language on concealed weapons, background checks, and gun shows. Bullard says the urgency to act on these issues isn't political. It's about the public safety of those he represents.
In a meeting with those folks prior to session, really where the passion comes from is that these individuals say that they feel like they're living in Beirut, that they have to lock their doors by 6:30 p.m. every night, have to lay on the floors, have to avoid sitting by windows.
Bullard wants to see workshops for legislators and leadership to create better gun legislation.
Too oftentimes we get caught up in the talking points that they're trying to take guns away from those that are law-abiding citizens. What we're simply asking for is the protection of those citizens who are victimized by gun violence in their own neighborhoods.
Other lawmakers like Representative Cynthia Stafford, another Democrat from Miami, has also filed a bill but has only seen one of its 3 committee stops. She says a bill like hers, which augments the Stand Your Ground rule, needs to at least be heard in the gun policy conversation.
I'm pleased to stand with my colleague, Senator Bullard, to call on lawmakers to allow bills that deal with gun control policy that they may not necessarily agree with, but at least give us an opportunity to be heard.
Republican lawmakers have had a lot to say in the recent weeks regarding gun issues. Representative Neil Combe, a Republican from Auburndale, says he's trying to send a message to the federal government.
This memorial reminds the President and Congress of their duty to uphold the Constitution and preserve our Second Amendment right and expresses opposition to any efforts that might infringe upon that right.
Combe's bill has had more than 50 co-sponsors and has already made it to the House floor for a vote. Representative Matt Gaetz, a Republican from Shalimar, had this to say about gun rights in Florida.
In Florida, I think it's a great source of pride that we believe in the Second Amendment, that we believe that the Second Amendment makes our citizens safer.
Up to now, then, it seems the majority of the Florida legislature has adopted to stand its ground, follow the polling numbers, and opt not to make many changes to the Florida gun policy. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stephen Rodriguez.
When is a game won on skill? When is a game won by chance? Thomas Andrew Gustafson reports the Florida Senate Rules Committee furthered the gambling debate, passing a bill defining the games of chance at the heart of the illegal gambling debate.
Let's play a quick game of word association. I say slot machines, and you say gambling? Casino? Probably a word having to do with one or the other. But if I say game promotion, what do you say? Coupon for a board game? Actually, it's a marketing tool used by businesses to get people in the door. They're a lot like slot machines, and you should be associating the phrase with internet cafes. Their operators claim it's advertising. We're selling internet and phone cards. But many see selling internet and phone cards as a cover for gambling. Gambling is illegal in Florida. Senator John Thrasher of St. Augustine is the sponsor of a bill clarifying the definition of game promotion.
A device is a prohibited slot machine if it simulates a game of chance and requires pay to play and awards something of value.
And that's all, folks. In the crusade against internet cafes and the illegal gambling associated with them, Thrasher's bill further defines what a slot machine is and then defines how the game promotions are basically that. But others believe the measure goes too far. Do Chuck E. Cheese's and Dave & Buster's get thrown into the mix?
It's not the intention to close down the amusement arcades, the bowling alleys, the Dave & Buster's. That's never been the intention.
That's Senator Garrett Richter of Naples. Still, opponents say because the bill does not allow for accumulation of awards, think saving up lots of tokens for the top shelf prize, the business model most of those companies run on will be ruined. Under the bill, the most value someone can cash out is 75 cents. Attorney Michael Wolf, representing the Florida Arcade and Bingo Association, says the prizes that make those businesses go won't exist with the small cash-out limit.
iTunes cards happen to be the number one thing that's redeemed for in Dave & Buster's, as I understand it. You're eliminating that. The seniors buy their groceries and their prescriptions with the gift cards that they get that are not cash. You're eliminating that.
Both arcade owners and the senior citizens that frequent the arcades came to the committee Tuesday to speak their opposition. Anita Silverman, a Delray Beach resident, was one of the many senior citizens trying to debunk the idea of an arcade as a criminal hotspot.
I'm a widow for 18 years. Sally is so lonely. I have an arcade 5 minutes away from my home. I go there and I meet people, I talk, and then I go home. Please, please, don't do away with these little arcades.
So why not make an exception for the arcades? Senator Jeremy Ring of Margate was quick to point out he's tried and tried again to bring the arcade industry to the table for proper regulation, and they refused.
This could have been worked out years ago and not lumped in with the internet cafe. But it is here today because there has only been vehement opposition and never any proactive response to try to work together to create the proper regulations.
Senator Eleanor Sobel of Hollywood agreed with Ring. She, along with all other members of the committee, voted yes on the bill but thought in due time there should be an exception for the arcades. All committee members agreed the bill worked to remove internet cafes. The bill will next be heard on the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Thomas Andrew Gustafson.
The Florida Chamber of Commerce is holding its International Days event in Tallahassee. It's a three-day-long happening devoted to nurturing and growing Florida's trade interactions with other countries. Tuesday was the first full day of International Days. Speakers included U.S. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Tom Donahue, Manny Mencia, Enterprise Florida Senior Vice President, and Brazilian Ambassador to the U.S., Mauro Vieira. Also addressing the conference, Florida's chief executive, Governor Rick Scott.
What you do is you would invest in tourism. So we dramatically increased our investment in Visit Florida. So we've had 2 years of record tourism now. My budget hasn't increased again this year to $75 million.
But some Florida tourism officials worried a big chunk of that money would have to counter some negative publicity in the state's largest international visitor market, Canada. Last year, more than 3.5 million Canadians came to Florida. Also last year, the Florida legislature passed a new law, as explained then by Canadian Automobile Association Quebec's Cedric Essamy.
All the non-United States residents have to have an international driving license if they're driving in the states of Florida.
This year, the legislature moved quickly to repeal that law, and Governor Scott took the occasion of the Florida Chamber's International Days conference to sign that repeal, his very first bill signature from the 2013 session.
It fixes that problem. We want everybody to come to our state. Both from up the 49 other states and from around the world. We love international visitors.
And with the bill repealed, Florida is now also feeling the love from Canadian Automobile Association head Ian Jack, who called the whole thing a simple misunderstanding between good neighbors.
I want to thank both houses of the legislature of Florida, the governor, his staff, and as well my good friends at AAA, Bob Sharp and his staff, who did wonderful work on this repeal bill. On behalf, again, of all the motorists of Canada who love to come down here and drive, myself included, thank you very much.
And with that, any chance of a mass Canadian tourist boycott of Florida over the matter of driver's licenses has apparently been averted. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. And now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at what's coming up at the Capitol tomorrow.
A three-day conference begins Wednesday with top international trade experts to discuss and promote the significant role that international business plays in Florida's economy. It'll be held at the FSU Conference Center. Among the participants, Senate President Don Gates, the Director of the Port of Tampa, Bill Johnson, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. The luncheon speaker will be Mauro Vieira, Ambassador of Brazil to the United States. The Senate Appropriations Committee takes up the General Appropriations Act tomorrow. That's the implementing bill for the budget. The committee could also consider a broad property insurance bill and a proposed committee bill dealing with the national mortgage settlement. That meeting starts at 9. The House Appropriations Committee has scheduled a 7-hour meeting tomorrow, starting at 12:30, to go through its General Appropriations Act. Tomorrow is School Choice Day. The Florida Alliance for Choices in Education and the Florida Coalition for Public School Options will be at the Capitol to lobby lawmakers. Governor Rick Scott will address them at 12:30. The House Judiciary Committee meets at 8:30 Wednesday. On the agenda is a bill requiring the designation of emergency response agencies for each school district. Also a bill dealing with the mandatory reporting of child abuse. Those are some of the goings-on at the Capitol tomorrow, April 3rd. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally this evening, the Florida Senate's election reform bill is one step closer to a floor vote after clearing another committee today. But Sasha Cordner tells us the debate grew tense as the measure's Republican sponsor faced off with Democrats who said the bill didn't go far enough.
The vetting process of the election reform bill in the Senate Community Affairs Committee started off like any other committee meeting, with the bill's sponsor, Republican Senator Jack Latvala of Clearwater, explaining parts of the bill. When it comes to early voting, it allows for more days, leaving the final say up to the supervisors of elections.
So we allow up to 14 days and require 8 days.
There are several more provisions in the bill, including the expansion of the number of early voting sites, a priority of the supervisors and the Florida Department of State. And while the bill has the support of many, including voting advocates and Democrats, they still say the bill could go a lot further. Both Democratic Senators Darren Soto and Chris Smith offered up 10 amendments, although Soto later withdrew his. But all of Smith's amendments failed. They included an amendment to require early voting the Sunday before Election Day to another amendment that would allow the same site used for early voting to also be used on Election Day as well. That last amendment was the only one that Latvala seemed to favor, with only one word.
Ditto.
But as Smith pushed on with many of his other amendments, things grew heated as Latvala accused the Democrats of introducing amendments for the wrong reasons.
I think this is just part of, really frankly, a continuing political effort to try to keep this issue in the news, no matter how we move towards a much better product. We'll just ride this horse until it dies. So this would also be, I would oppose this amendment also today.
Later, Latvala did say he knew at least one of Smith's amendments was well-intended, a comment that a more subdued Smith took issue with.
I'm glad that, I guess the words well-intended were finally used, because all day I've heard, ride a dead horse, hop on to make news, and other what I would consider disparaging comments. This amendment, as in all the others, have been well-intended. This amendment, as in all the others, have been publicized as good steps in making good elections. My goal today was to make a bill better. It's the chance to give people a chance to have their most fundamental right counted.
But when it came time to make his final argument for his unamended bill, Latvala did not back down. He said he took these repeated attempts to change the bill personally, blasting the Democrats for choosing partisanship over what he called a good bill.
You know, I offered to try to work this out as recently as yesterday and take a number of these amendments that were offered today. There's a couple of them that, you know, I mean, they make sense, okay? But I wanted it as a global solution. And it all came down to the fact that Senator Smith is insisting on mandatory voting on the Sunday before Election Day. That was the package. That was the key to the package. And anything less than that wouldn't work. Well, I'm sorry, but I can't, as a public official, I can't ignore the fact that under oath we had 9 supervisors of elections who know elections better than any of us appear before our committee and say that was a bad idea.
The bill passed along party lines with Democrats opposed in the Senate Community Affairs Committee voting Tuesday. It has one more committee stop before it heads to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank, Thomas Andrew Gustafson, and Stephen Rodriguez. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2013 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. And from Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte to over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information online at usairways.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.